Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Now, Budget 2025 has been a key focus at the National Economic Dialogue in Dublin Castle taking place today. Taoiseach Simon Harris, who addressed the conference, said that cost of living measures must once again be a focus for Budget 2025. Well, for more on this, we're joined now by Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue. And Minister, you're welcome to the programme this evening.
Good evening, Sarah.
So the Taoiseach, as I say, promising the cost of living measures must once again be a focus for Budget 2025. What can people expect?
So in recent budgets that we've done, Sarah, we have made changes to the level of tax that you pay and levels of social welfare payments that are available to those who need them. We've increased them budget by budget. We've made no decisions at all yet about what will be in the budget or what the nature of decisions will be. But we recognise that for so many, prices are still high, and we will respond back to that then by the tax and social welfare decisions that we make.
Yeah, I know Taoiseach Simon Harris mentioned the tax bands as well and credits. He said they must be properly indexed again so people don't drift into the higher rate band of income tax. But he did say in relation to cost of living specifically, he said, I believe it should be a focus of Budget 2025, building on the cost of living measures in the previous 2 years. That specifically seems to reference to me once-off measures. But then we also had Finance Minister Michael McGrath saying the focus should be on permanent measures rather than a large series of once-off measures. So is there some disagreement there?
Far from it. The Taoiseach was very open to how it can be achieved. And myself and Minister McGrath did a press conference after the Taoiseach spoke. And we all emphasised the fact that even though inflation is falling, for everybody, prices are still higher. And you covered off in your news bulletin before I came on the fact that we have made progress in inflation coming down. That 2 years ago, inflation was above 10%. Then it moved to around 5%. Now it should be somewhere between 2 and 3%. That is really important that we've done it, but prices are still higher. Mm. And the government will decide in early October, Sarah, what is the way in which we will respond back to that. We've managed to avoid adding to inflation here in Ireland in the last 2 years, and we've kept our public finances safe by growing a surplus to make sure we don't end up spending money we might not have in the future.
So
and we'll do that
then
again in the fifth budget.
That you are in agreement then with Michael McGrath when he says the focus should be on permanent measures rather than a large series of one-off measures. That whole one-off measure package thing that we've seen for a couple of budgets, that's over.
Well, no, Minister McGrath said we'll decide all this closer to budget day. Like what the Minister for Finance said is that we'll get to a point that permanent measures have a bigger role to play, and we will decide the mix of that on budget day. I've said the same thing myself. I think that is the right approach to take. The key thing is that we help with prices still being high, and the government is united on that, and we will decide before the budget what is the way of doing that in the collegiate and careful way we have on each budget that we've done.
We heard from Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty a little earlier in the programme, and he was saying the timing of this government intervention on the cost of living crisis 11 days out from an election is a political stunt. He pointed to the fact that you increased excise duty just 2 weeks ago, taking with one hand, promising to give back with the other.
I'm sure if we were to make any reference to the cost of living crisis, Sinn Féin would be given out about that as well. I think it's very understandable when we are addressing all those who have a view in the budget. We lay out what the themes of the budget will be and the priorities that the government believes are important and hear back from civil society in relation to it. That's what we did. All Sinn Féin can do is give out. We're interested in proposing solutions.
Well, he has a point, though, doesn't he? If the Taoiseach is talking about how cost of living is an issue and must be the focus for Budget 2025, and at the same time, 2 weeks ago, you increased the cost of living for a lot of motorists.
Because what we said is that when we brought in the lower rate of excise, at that point, the price of petrol and diesel was well in excess of €2 per litre. We always said they would be temporary. We always said they would be phased out. I've little doubt at all if we had suspended the phasing out of those measures, we'd be facing the case we're doing that because there's a local election coming up. We're implementing the plans that we announced on Budget Day. We accept for some, For all who are using petrol and diesel, the price will go up because of that measure. But when we brought the measures in, they were temporary. The price of a litre of diesel or petrol was well above €2, okay. €2.20, €2.30.
So if it gets to that point again, would you consider it? Because I think it's at the highest point this year, 183, I think, for petrol, which is at the highest point this year. If it gets to the €2 mark, would you look at it again?
Well, we did make changes in the past when it got well above €2. And if we were to see a return of prices for diesel and petrol that were to go so high again, we would consider that, like we would consider lots of things as part of the budgetary process. I think it's fair to say, and this is why the European Central Bank were able to issue the statement they did today, that all other things being equal, Sarah, it's very possible that when we get into the second half of the year, all forms of inflation, including petrol and diesel, will be in a far better place than they were this time a year ago.
Yeah,
that's what we hope will be the case.
It's flagging interest rate cuts, of course. Would you expect if those interest rate cuts start to materialise that Irish banks will pass those on immediately?
I would expect that they will be passed on. I think it's fair to expect that will happen. Banks here in Ireland have, in fairness, being careful about how they passed on the rate increases over the last number of years.
That was because we were ahead, wasn't it? Our mortgage rates were already well above the EU average.
And they recognised that, yes. And they recognised that in terms then of the decisions they made. But I think equally it's important that as rates begin to come down, that we see that passed on here in Ireland and across all of the European Union. The background to all of this is, if I look at the national economic dialogue we're having here at the moment, 2 years ago, inflation was well above 10%. Please, I think it's very likely it'll be below 3% later on in the year.
So
and
that is
why measures that were taken to get inflation down, such as interest rates, are to help with rising inflation, such as the measures
but
we brought
like to see those
in
measures?
Last year's budget, Sarah, just very quickly. We review all those again and decide what's appropriate.
Okay, but in terms of your message to the Irish banks, would you like to see those interest rate cuts when they are implemented by the ECB to be passed on, if not immediately, within a month, 2 months, 3 months, within short order?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about housing, because a lot of promises about further cost of living supports, but you may have seen that poll in the Irish Times today saying 9 out of 10 people believe the government is going in the wrong direction on housing. And I thought a lot of the verbatim responses to that poll were very interesting. I was reading them today. And a lot of the people mentioned vulture funds and how they're finding they would go to buy a house and it's already been snapped up by investment funds or vulture funds, whatever phrase you want to use. And they're finding that's a really big problem.
Indeed, and it is a challenge. In lots of cases, the reason why investment funds are purchasing parts of apartment blocks, for example, however, is to put in place a purchase that then allows the apartment block to be built. And, you know, we talk a lot of the time about needing more private and international capital in our country to allow more homes to be built. And that in turn gives confidence for larger housing permissions to be granted and larger housing projects to be built.
It has led to this big problem, though, hasn't it, whereby people now are finding, they're seeing these huge apartment complexes going up in their area. They go along to see could they buy one, and no, they're being told they can rent one. And not only is it only an option to rent, but the rent is sky high.
But the reason in many times why the apartment block has been built in the first place is because an investment fund has given a commitment that they will purchase a share of the apartments in that block, which in turn leads to overall supply going up. But Sarah, I acknowledge the great frustration that is caused by this and where we are with housing overall. I briefly make the case that is why it's important that if you look at this year so far, work has now commenced on 29,000 homes already so far this year. And if you look at where we are with purchases, for example, we now have 500 individuals or couples buying their first home every week. So that points to progress that has been made, but we need to maintain and build on that progress in the years ahead.
I just want to stick with that vulture fund question for a moment, because that is the do you accept that's the wrong type of supply? That build-to-rent apartments at the top of the market rents, you're talking about €3,000 for a two-bed, if not more, because they can set the rent at whatever they want. They're not caught by the rent pressure zones with no option to buy. That's the wrong type of supply.
I don't believe it should be the predominant form of supply. But I do believe we need more rent to buy. We need more build to rent to deal with how we can increase the supply of rental accommodation in our country. And I accept that a portion of that accommodation that will be built for rental purposes will have levels of rent within it that will be high. So I don't believe it is the appropriate form for all rental accommodation. But if we want more rental accommodation in our country, we need companies and organisations who can provide rental accommodation at scale while the state is investing in cost rental accommodation.
But the reality is the way the government has set this up, because those apartment blocks, new apartment blocks, can set the rent at whatever they want, they're not caught by the RPZ, but by just the way it's set up, they will always be above market. They'll always be the highest. Because they know they're going to be caught by rent pressure zones as soon as the rent is set. So you're saying they shouldn't be all different, you know, higher rents. They all will be higher rents. That's what's happening.
But if we didn't have rent pressure zones, we'd be in a situation then that we would not have in place the framework that we need to minimise the rent increases for existing rental accommodation. And every time you bring in a mechanism that looks to charge how prices and rents are managed within an economy.
Sarah,
you asked me a question. It doesn't have a straightforward answer, but it's one I'm going to do my best still to make the case for. What I was saying there is that when you bring in a rent pressure zone, it can have an effect on the initial price of rent for new accommodation that has been built. But on the other hand, it means for accommodation that is in place, it puts a framework in place to minimise the rent increases. And I think if we hadn't done that, the rent pressures that so many tenants have faced in the last few years would even have been higher and even have been more difficult.
I think it's probably cold comfort for those people who find themselves looking for accommodation right now. One of the things the Housing Commission has recommended is making all rents
I accept that point, Claire, that it's something we need to review. But you talk of cold comfort. I think the comfort would even be colder for existing tenants who, in the absence of rent pressure zones, would have seen their rents go up by far higher than they already have.
So is the message from Fine Gael, it could be worse?
Oh, the message from Fine Gael is that from a housing point of view, there are signs that it is getting better in terms of supply, in terms of homes that people are purchasing and new homes that are being built. But we accept we need to build on this progress in the years ahead, and we're determined to do it. As I said, for the first part of this year alone, there's already 29,000 homes being commenced. And when we entered government, it was a fraction of that, Sarah. And I'm convinced we can build on that progress quickly during this year.
Now, separate to that, but related, we heard from Emmeline Spallin earlier in the show. She was talking about the move to move Ukrainians out of state accommodation. She's calling on the government to reconsider closing centres that are housing Ukrainians at the moment. Will that be reconsidered?
So we said we'll look at a number of different options in relation to that accommodation. Some of the accommodation will need to be kept. Some of it will need to be repurposed. And some of it will be moved back to the purpose for which it originally was intended. In some cases, that will be tourism. So I think what happens to each piece of accommodation will be done on a kind of a case-by-case basis. But we are seeing overall at the moment, Sarah, the number of people who are coming to Ukraine begin to diminish. And we're beginning to see many Ukrainians go back home.
Yeah.
And you rightly that's the second time you've interrupted me.
I'm going to briefly
conclude my answer. You made the point to me earlier on about the great challenges we have in accommodation and housing at the moment. For those reasons, that accommodation cannot be vacant. So we'll make additional and different use of it.
You're talking about Ukrainians coming to Ireland and Ukrainians leaving. What Emmeline Spallin was talking about are the Ukrainians who have been here for the last 2 years. Their parents who have got jobs, their children who are in schools. And if I just give you the example of the 170 residents at the Loch Allen Hotel in Drumshambo in Leitrim, they were given just 2 weeks to leave the premises. That's due to close next Friday. Many of them are women and children. I wonder, has the government any idea what the message is here? Where should those people go, given the conversation we've just had about the rental accommodation sector?
And of course, we will support and provide help that we can in accessing alternative accommodation. But they've been in a hotel. They've been in a hotel that we have been paying for the use of now on behalf of the state for 1 to 2 years. And as numbers begin to fall, I think it is understandable that those who own that hotel may want to make different use of it. And we provided this accommodation on an emergency basis. Mm. And as the kind of emergency that we're facing is changing, I think it is appropriate that we look at the use of the accommodation. And of course, we'll provide any assistance that we can to those who are exiting from it, which is why I said a few moments ago, Sarah, that we may well be the case that some of the accommodation that has been used for Ukrainians, we keep on using it for Ukrainians and move more Ukrainians to other existing sites.
Okay. I want to ask you finally, Minister, the Israeli ambassador to Ireland has been speaking to RTE this evening, saying that Ireland's position on Palestine sends the wrong message to tech hubs. The full quote being, I think it sends the wrong message about the location and centrality of Ireland as a tech hub when there are more and more people who are concerned about moving to Ireland. That sounds a little like a threat, do you think?
Look, I leave it to others to decide how they wanted to interpret that statement. And I'm not going to get involved in an exchange with an ambassador. I think it sends the right signal about Ireland overall. And it certainly sends the right signal about the view we have regarding what is evolving in the Middle East at the moment. The reason why the country made the decision that we did, we made it collectively, we acknowledged all of the consequences that could flow from the decision, is that we are convinced that a two-state solution is the only viable long-term solution to the conflict in the Middle East, and that is so far away for the people of Palestine at the moment that a recognition of the state is the appropriate signal to send. Other work that we need to do to ensure that Ireland continues to keep the companies that we've had in Ireland for many decades, and we'll continue with that work.
Yeah, and that was actually my last question, just to follow up. You're saying you're aware of the consequences of Ireland's position. Do you have any doubt or any fear that among those consequences could be what the Israeli ambassador is alluding to there, which is that tech companies, particularly those from the US, which might have strong allegiances to Israel, might reconsider their position either coming here or staying here?
I'm confident that those who are moving here and those who are here, we will keep here and we will continue to attract here. Many of these large employers, whether they be tech or not, also have many people leading them, managing and working in them, who also have other strong views regarding what is happening in the Middle East. Ireland has made different political decisions and made different political statements at different points in time. And in our years of engaging with the foreign direct investment community here in Ireland, we've been able to point to this being an economically stable environment within which companies can grow, Sarah, and that will continue to be the case.
Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue, thank you very much for joining us.